This is the second Chicago Bars podcast episode, which I recorded at the end of 2022 with my friend Mike McMains. Mike is the man behind Tours with Mike, a local tour operation with a goal of making architecture, design, and history fun and interesting. Tours with Mike has received a ton of press from outlets such as Block Club Chicago, Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, Daytime Chicago, Fox 32, WBEZ Radio, WGN TV and Radio, and many more. WTTW's Jeffrey Bayer said of McMains, he is a tour guide's tour guide, and the Chicago Tribune called his ugly buildings tour the local architecture tour that needed to happen. In addition to his ugly buildings walking tour, he has an underground Chicago tour plus rats, an incredible interiors one, architecture's greatest hits, and, with the baseball season starting again, a tour called Play Ball, the Wrigleyville Tour. Mike and I met in the neighborhood formerly known as Boys Town. We'll get to that in a moment. To discuss the bar he chose for this episode, Sidetrack. I'm Tommy Henry, and this is One on Every Corner, the Chicago Bars Podcast. Mike, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for talking to me.
Tell us a little bit about your history, how long you've been in Chicago, and all that fun stuff.
Sure. I'm Midwest forever. I grew up outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota, went to college at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. After I graduated in 2000, which I guess is half my life ago now, I've been living in Chicago. So this is basically as far south on 94 as I plan on going.
And how did Tours with Mike come about?
Buildings have always been the focal point of my professional life. I studied real estate and urban planning in college. I worked 17 years in real estate investment management, focusing on just the functionality, the economics of buildings. And then in my free time for 15 years, I volunteered for the Chicago Architecture Center, creating and giving tours to people all over the world. Then during the pandemic, I think like a lot of people just kind of thought, about what do I want to do with my life, and I want to make my passion my profession. So I started my solo tour company, launched it just last year, and I strive to make architecture, design, and history fun and interesting through a combination of walking and virtual experiences.
So first moved to Chicago, you moved to the area that we're in today.
Yeah, so right now the area that we're in, it has a few different names. Some will call it Lakeview. That's the official, it's the name of parts of the neighborhood. That's the name of the official community area. Some people will call this area North Halsted. Some will call it Boys Town. Depending on who you ask, it's a district or a neighborhood. I don't know. So it's all of those things right now.
Well, and I've known it pretty much forever as Boys Town, and I know there was a push 2 years ago to make it a little more inclusive, yeah, which is how North Halsted, all one word, came about.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think that there's some people who don't like name changes. I mean, you'll still see people say it's Sears Tower forever. But I think that when you look at things, it's by having a gendered name like Boys Town, it's not as inclusive. So I totally understand the approach, and I'm totally fine calling it North Halsted.
Now, do you remember when you first came to Chicago, the first bar that you walked into as a Chicago resident?
I remember the first bar I went to when I was a college student here, and it was actually one of the first in the neighborhood now. It was Little Jim's.
Sure.
I wasn't quite 21 yet, but they weren't carding that aggressively, so I was able to get in there with some of my buddies. But yeah, when Little Jim's opened in the mid-1970s, it was one of the first four LGBTQ establishments, really establishing this as the new LGBTQ district for the area.
From their website, Sidetrack is an LGBTQIA+ establishment in the heart of Chicago, Chicago's proudest neighborhood. This bar opened in 1982 in one room with less than 1,000 square feet. According to the website, they used beer cases for seating. 2 years later, they expanded, doubling their size. They also installed a new white tile facade, still signless. So this is back at a time where, you know, you didn't necessarily need to broadcast what you were up to. And I think part of that is, while Sidetrack continued to expand over the years, the building's facade didn't include a window until 1994.
amazing. And that was the same year they installed a small sign. Mm-hmm. So 12 years without a window or a sign, I mean, you had to be in the know. And I'm guessing that the community, word spread quickly. Everybody knew, you know, this is the place to be. So
yeah, and this wasn't, I mean, that was the tradition that you had for a lot of these establishments, that you had to hide so much of your identity in the past. So you'd have these coded different types of symbols and signs. You'd have to go through back alleys in order to get to places because you weren't allowed to be who you were, and you didn't want anyone spotting you in any of these establishments. So it was very much of the culture. Sidetrack certainly didn't pioneer it. That had been a culture that has been, as long as there have been people who have been condemned for being LGBTQ, there people have been had to be discreet about it.
The idea that this place has been in operation for 40 years now, you know, now spread across 8 storefronts, multiple levels that can host more than 1,000 people at a time, is fantastic. And, you know, in addition to being a party bar, and it was one of the first video bars when it opened, as, you know, MTV was taking hold, the Sidetrack crew has also hosted countless activist events, made untold donations of good services and such to the community. One of the other interesting things I found out was that Sidetrack has welcomed dozens of political figures over the years for campaign appearances and lobbying opportunities. Not a surprise at all, right? If you're looking for the LGBTQ vote, where do you go? Like, yeah, this is the neighborhood. This is likely going to be the bar to get the highest group of people and, yeah, and make friends.
Absolutely. Well, not surprising by today's standards, but that would have been unheard of in the 20th century.
Sure.
when the bar first opened, where you didn't have anyone really recognizing the community at all. So if you look at the context for Chicago's history, it's still a pretty recent phenomenon that you would have Illinois governors, mayoral candidates, city council members, congresspeople looking and showing up at this bar to try to embrace the LGBTQ community.
Sidetrack was also named the most popular bar in Illinois by BuzzFeed, the most visited bar in Chicago by Lyft, the best gay bar in Chicago by Time Out, and the number one gay bar in the U.S. by Yelp in 2021. So you have picked the popular bar here in Chicago.
Well, I think that one of the things that all of these are, they're great accolades, and these are some of the things that I really love about Sidetrack. I think that something that that's a very funny aspect of it, if you've just from being in the LGBT community here, is, I mean, the official name is Sidetrack. A lot of people just call it Sidetracks, and it's a name that just sticks. It's not its name, but a lot of people will call it Sidetracks or Tracks. In 2010, one of my friends, he did a video that got some sort of viral attention locally, and I don't know if you recall when you had these, like, animated bears that were talking to each other, and they're saying, I want a new iPhone. And like, well, what about this phone that has all these other things? And the bear keeps on saying, I don't care. I want an iPhone. I want the new iPhone. And it keeps on going like that. It's following that template. My buddy made this, but it was about Sidetracks.
Oh.
And it's one of the bears is saying, hey, let's try all these other bars, that LGBTQ bars in the area. And the other bear just says, I don't care. I want to go to Sidetracks. And they say, well, I mean, it can be crowded. It can have a long line. It doesn't have a dance floor, things like that. And the bear just keeps on replying back, I don't care. I want to go to Sidetracks. And so that's something that I think it's funny. It's something that can be recognized for this bar, but as something that people just go here a lot. But there's a reason for it. It's, I'd say, more than any other establishment, this is the anchor for the LGBTQ neighborhood that we have today, known as North Halsted.
In reading about the number of activist events that happened here over the years, Open Hand Chicago, which was founded in 1988, it was Chicago's first in-home meals program for persons living with AIDS, went on to serve 3 million meals. One of the things that I had read was that when Open Hand Chicago was having difficulty pursuing all their efforts, Sidetrack stepped in. There was even one night a month where the employees donated all of their earnings for the night to keep Open Hand Chicago going, which unheard of for most bars,
yeah,
I think. And I mean, honestly, it's a gorgeous bar. So if you took out all of the accolades and all of the activist events and all the political people, it's gorgeous here. What do you think in your time here has been kind of the biggest change in the neighborhood or in the bar scene? in your past, how many years? 20 years in Chicago?
Yeah, it's 22 years now in Chicago. When I first moved here in the early 2000s, things were, you saw a lot of excitement, a lot of activity where you had, you're starting to gain acceptance within within mainstream culture, where you're getting political wins, whether it be marriage equality or anti-discrimination laws. And it was just like a lot of excitement. But I think that a lot of that was starting to taper off, that with that widespread acceptance, I think a lot of people were like, okay, do we necessarily need a LGBTQ district anymore? Because we can now go to other places and we want to go and experience the same bars and clubs that you have all over the city. And I think that there was sort of just like a trying to rethink about, do we still need an LGBTQ neighborhood and district? But as a result of the pandemic, I think that things just like shut down so much and people felt such isolation from that period that it really seems like that there's been like a resurgence of interest of people going to LGBTQ bars and establishments. Another thing that was happening at that time was you had a lot of the George Floyd protests. And I think that in this neighborhood definitely had a big reckoning with that, because a lot of the spaces here, I think they can be fairly criticized, that a lot of them were centered around gay white men. And if you weren't that, you didn't have a place there, you weren't feeling welcome. So there's been, I think, a good conversation to be able to have people of different races, of different genders, to be able to have it a more inclusive environment. And that's really tying into the renaming of it, going from Boys Town to North Halsted. So I'd say that that's a big trend that I've seen recently, in that the area has become more diverse. And when I go out, it's packed when I go to these bars and clubs. It's just really lively and active, and I am seeing a lot more diversity in the crowd now than what I did when I first moved here.
If there's one silver lining in a global pandemic, it's that people have expanded their...
Yeah. Well, you need to have these conversations and have these reckonings and try to make things better, and I think it's a good thing for the neighborhood.
Speaking of better, I'm drinking a slushy. I forget what flavor it is.
This one is the Black Cherry Buzz. It's spiked with vodka.
It is delightful on so many levels. I can't get enough of it.
One of the things that the bar is known for are their spiked slushies, and it has a rotating menu. The bar that we're in has four different ones, and they have different offerings depending on which bar you're at.
So we're in one side of the bar that opens at 3, and then throughout the rest of the evening, will the other bars open up? How do they settle?
Yeah, they do a staging for the for how much it opens, because it's a 15,000 square foot venue. It's the largest LGBTQ bar in the Midwest, and so it'll expand. But again, we're on a Wednesday, so it's not their busiest night.
Right.
But
they may be here with just the one space.
So I'm not sure if they do lots of events and activities. I'm not sure what's going on tonight. One of their more popular things is they do a show tunes night. They do that on a regular basis. So that's usually pretty busy. So they'll definitely be opening up the main bar to include that. They're probably not going to be including the roof deck because it's a snowy, wintry mix upstairs and no one wants to be out there right now. But yeah, I mean, it's really large. And it's been pretty wild to watch how this bar has grown and evolved over the time that I've been here. I mean, so here, like when you were saying, when it was under 1,000 square feet, no windows when it first opened in 82, and now it's the largest in the Midwest with multi-levels and so many different events, programming, different ways to experience it. It's pretty wild on how it's changed.
Yeah, well, and even, you know, I'm trying to eye the side room that we're in, thinking like, I wonder how many square feet this room is. Mm-hmm. You know, 800, 1,000, maybe?
Yeah, this is probably around the size of what it was originally in the side room.
And you know what? It's a fine size room. I think there are a lot of Chicago bars that are about this size, but based on what we're talking about, you know, how long could it last? Obviously, mm-hmm. not for very long before they were able to gobble up all the other buildings and build onto it you know, increase it.
Well, that was one of the criticisms that I think that Sidetrack was getting
I think you mean Sidetracks?
Yeah, that's right. It's Sidetracks. That's one of the criticisms I think it was getting, is that it was growing so much that it was gobbling up the block. But I think it's kind of hit its limit to expansion on where it's going to go to the north and south. But it was growing and growing and growing. And it's been really interesting to watch how it physically grows, because it's also just grown and evolved with the times, like with the activism. Because first, when it first opened, it was just a place so that LGBTQ people could exist. And then it started shifting to activism. And one of their early efforts that they did was in 1987. A lot of the LGBTQ bars around Chicago, they end up closing and busing the patrons who are showing up to go to downtown Chicago because the city council was going to be voting on an anti-discrimination ordinance. And this was really seen as the first time that city council recognized the political will, the political impact that Chicago's LGBTQ population has. It didn't pass that year, but it did pass the next year. So that's really seen as the first effort. And you had the bars here, they were leading that charge.
It's amazing to think of a bar saying, we're going to close, we're going to forsake all of that income for the day because it's this important to us.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think that Sidetrack has definitely been at the forefront of all of it, whether it be for fighting for just anti-discrimination at the state and federal level, with marriage equality, with watching after those who have AIDS, with being able to just recognize, just allowing us to exist. They've really done a good job of trying to push that. The owners of it, it's Art Johnson and Pepe Pena. They have owned the bar for 40 years, and they've also been romantic partners now for 48 years. Yeah. And there's a new documentary that's out. It's called Art and Pepe, and it's about them and their life and their bar that they established here.
Well, and I think there was a WTTW. I think it's called Out and Proud, which I think also includes them. It's funny how often their names came up as I was doing research on this and all the old newspaper articles. Mm-hmm. To be business partners and romantic partners for 40 plus years. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If you walk into a Chicago bar, what will make you want to turn around and walk out, like, immediately? Is there something where you go, you know what, this is not the place for me?
Good question. I think that sometimes when you go into a space and you walk in and then you immediately feel a vibe that you're not welcome, that there's some type of, I don't know, there's some type of click or establishment or regulars there, and then when you show up you just don't feel that inviting energy, I just don't want to go there. And I mean, to be honest, I don't feel like I get that a lot in Chicago. And I think that's one of the things that I've really loved about this city, living here as I've traveled across the country, that for the most part Chicago bars and the people there, they're very welcoming. It's something I don't see often when I travel to other places.
One of my goals this year has been to go into bars that I haven't been into before. Mm-hmm. Often if they have an old style sign or a Schlitz sign out front, you know, something kind of old timey, I'll have to stop in there. But the number of bars that I have been walked into, same thing, where you walk in, it's like the needle comes off the record,
right.
The dog stops barking, and all the regulars turn and look at you like,
And then you're wondering, do I step back out or do I try to make a go of it?
Right, exactly. And most of the time, because I'm at an age where I'm a little more fearless now, I'll step in and order beer and try not to be too complicated until I kind of get a lay of the land. There was one place, though, that I stopped in. Patio was open. There was a guy sitting out front. Mm-hmm. Looked to be a server, maybe a bartender talking to him. I walked in, sat down at the bar with a friend of mine, and we sat there for a good 5 or 6 minutes. And I thought, no one's going to come offer us a drink. This is definitely a neighborhood, local, unless they recognize you, they're going to make you wait forever to get a drink, if at all. And so we ended up leaving. It's a rare occurrence that happens, but certainly it's... Being a middle-aged white guy, I feel like I can go into most bars and not have anyone stare at me, and I know it's much easier for me than for probably many. What are you looking for in a bar when you go to a bar? What will make you stay? And second part of that question, do you have a go-to drink at, like, any bar you walk into? Obviously, you can't get a black cherry slushy at every bar. And this is delightful, and I'm going to get another one in a minute.
Yeah, I think that usually my go-to drink that I usually get is Jameson and ginger beer. My mom got me on Jameson, so I have her to thank for that.
Nice.
But it's a simple drink. It's easy, and it's good. So that's usually my go-to that I have, but I'm adaptable. Not beer, but... If it's cocktails, wine, whatever, I'm good with that. But Jameson and ginger beer is probably my go-to. As far as the types of places that my friends and I would like to, it's pretty good, right?
Sorry, I'm making slurping sounds. With my, I don't know. I think the mic probably caught that, but yeah.
Hey, that's all right. You're at the bottom. It's a real experience that you're in right now. As far as the venues that that I try to target for hanging out, most of my friends are LGBTQ. So we're typically spending our time going to those types of establishments or going to ones that are more friendly, more fluid all over the place. It's just a lot more fun. I avoid venues that if the venues are going to have sports all over the TVs, I generally avoid that. Sports don't really play a role in my life, and it kind of sets the tone of the bar, and just like, oh, I'm not feeling that. There are a few exceptions, like North End, a few blocks of here, it's a LGBTQ bar, and they do have sports on the TVs, but again, it's also LGBTQ bar.
Right. It's not a sports
right.
bar. It
right.
just happens to have sports for people.
LGBTQ bar that has sports.
Right.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that's so funny is that we're just a few blocks away from Wrigleyville. We are so close to it. And it always makes me laugh when I see people leaving Wrigleyville and they're trying to find a bar to go to and they're drunken, they don't know the area, and they're walking this area and it's like you're lost.
Yeah. And they walk in and go, dude, where's all the chicks? Like, yeah, probably not here. No, it is hilarious. So we're at 3349 North Halsted, and Wrigley Field is half a mile away,
yeah.
if that. And so, to your point, for people who are coming in from, I'll just say the suburbs, I won't name them specifically, if they don't know the way around,
yeah.
you know, hopefully they'll walk in and be cool and have a
yep.
beer and support the local establishments. I'm looking out the window, and I can see one of those gold kind of spires. I don't know what they're called, but it actually has the North Halsted name on it.
Yeah.
And I know there were bike racks that had the Boys Town thing on it. I don't know whether those are still around or whether those got pulled out in the effort to rename the neighborhood. But
yeah, so the Rockets there, they're landmarks there where you've got the Golden Rockets, you've got a rainbow design on it, and then you've got the Legacy Walk in it. Where
I called it a spire, but it's called
that's
a rocket.
Fine. Well, I think a spire is fine. I mean, they look kind of like rockets.
Yeah.
But it's part of the Legacy Walk, which with each of those pylons, it's honoring famous people or major events in LGBTQ history around the world. And so it's sort of a monument that you can walk by, you can learn all about them. They rotate those panels out. But something that's pretty amazing is that this is the first LGBTQ district in the country that's been recognized by the city that it's in. So it first happened here, and the city was supportive of putting those pylons in. I think that some people will critique them and say, oh, they're tacky designs. But I look at the intent behind it, and I'm like, it's pretty important that Chicago had that. And it's pretty special that we've got this in the city.
You're known for your ugly buildings tours. You're known for your tours with rats, which is hilarious. As the music kicks up in here, what is the easiest way for people to find you?
Everything's on my website, tourswithmike.com.
It couldn't be easier. Mike McVans, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Great, thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to One on Every Corner, the Chicago Bars podcast. This episode was written, recorded, and edited by me, Tommy Henry. Special thanks to Mike McMains for taking time out of his schedule to share his knowledge and insights, and for introducing me to boozy, icy drinks. Also thanks to Sidetrack for letting us record this episode there. Check out the Chicago History Podcast Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram pages for articles and pictures related to this episode and past episodes posted throughout the week. If you have a bar I should check out or one about which you'd like to know more, leave me a voice message by going to chicagohistorypod.com and clicking on the microphone in the lower corner. Depending on the content, I may play your message on a future episode. Much of the original art for the Chicago History Podcast used on the social media pages was created by John K. Schneider, much appreciated friend. He can be found at Angel Eyes Art JKS on Instagram or via email at angeleyesartjks@gmail.com. I will be back soon with more stories from Chicago's history, including its bars history. Until then, get out and explore when possible. Strike up a conversation with a local over a pint at a neighborhood pub. Learn more about whatever city you live in, and stay safe.